Hello and welcome back to the Mobile Chicanes. My name is Naveen Razik. Alongside me, as always, it is Joshua Carawalden, and we are coming at you with the big breaking news story overnight that Fernando Alonso is going to miss the Monaco Grand Prix and race in the Indy 500. This is the breaking news that shocks pretty much everyone. I think most people thought it was a late April Fool's joke, but no, it's happening. It's real. Don't panic. It's just really awesome in general, Josh, isn't it?
Yeah, like, I mean, there are a lot of people, directly and indirectly in relation to Alonso that will benefit from this deal. And honestly, you know, I was more surprised by this than Rosberg's shock retirement. Like, you know, this really did... It took the wind out of me when, you know, it just popped up on my newsfeed, and I was like, wait, what? No. This can't be happening. Like, someone's just, you know, had one too many. But no, it's real. Didn't it create the social media storm? Like, you know, it just went off. I haven't checked IndyCars or Indianapolis Motor Speedways or the Indy 500's Facebook status since it broke. However, I only assume that it's one big line going up. But yeah, this is just so big on so many levels. Like, this is just so layered. This is just so layered and. It's had a rise. It will get bigger. A very multi-layered in terms of the effects it's going to have. Let's just focus on the Monaco Grand Prix first. It's going to cause some added interest to the Monaco Grand Prix without Alonso being there, and you know, possibly throwing in the return of Jenson Button, who is widely tipped to replace Alonso for the Monaco Grand Prix. So that's a bit good. You know, gets the interest up. You know, a different grid. You know, an entirely different paddock. It's going to be very weird not to see Alonso in the Monaco paddock. If Button for some reason, you know, doesn't want to or isn't interested or whatever for the Monaco Grand Prix weekend. There are two more drivers that McLaren can immediately call on in the form of Oliver Tierney, who's done some testing for the team over a few years, and then Nobu Matsushita, who I think is second in line behind Button. That's going to be interesting to see a paddock without Alonso, and also this will be the first Grand Prix in his whole career that Carlos Sainz is the sole Spaniard at an F1 race. And that is a sign of things to come, because Alonso is not going to continue forever. So it's going to be big for Carlos Sainz if Tierney or Matsushita get the call up ahead of Button. It's going to be huge for them. It's going to be very, you know, awkward not seeing Alonso there, or his name, or his radio messages. It's going to be That's going to throw some things out. And then in America, it has even more of an impact. You know, IndyCar, you know, the big, big winners out of this. Like, you know, the amount of people watching this year's Indy 500 is going to be extraordinary. Especially when you consider that last year, for the 100th running of the Indy 500, the crowd was sold out. And it witnessed an absolute, you know, race for the ages. It was Alexander Rossi coming across the line in maximum fuel conservation, totally manor style, to win the Indy 500 this year.
It's going to be extraordinary. First off, Formula One, yeah, we don't know who's going to come in, but it's very interesting that this is the race he's chosen to miss. Of course, he could have. I don't know if they were still open to a Le Mans campaign. There were talks about McLaren entering Le Mans earlier, most of which are rubbish. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. This is the one track where they had a decent chance of getting a top five finish because of the heavy attrition rate and the fact that their engine will probably not pull them back as far. But the fact that And I think the other thing that we have to remember as well is that this is a McLaren-sponsored deal, effectively. He's going to be run as the sixth car at Andretti Autosport, who are the de facto, effectively, Honda factory team now in IndyCar, even if they aren't the quickest necessarily. So he's going to have the McLaren money behind him. His car is going to look presumably like the 2017 F1 car. And yeah, it's just a big deal. It's huge for IndyCar and huge for Honda and Andretti. But it's also interesting as well because McLaren have pretty much had zero to no direct involvement in the United States. That must be Zach Brown on the phone, isn't it?
Or maybe Ron Dennis, yeah, you know, calling us to, you know, slag them off.
No, he's gone now. But yeah, it's interesting because there is no direct involvement by McLaren in US motorsport. I think they don't run any teams in IMSA. I don't even think they've got any GT Daytonas in there running third party. They don't run an IndyCar. They haven't run since the 60s, I'd say. A very long time indeed. And I think the only place he might possibly see them is Pirelli World Challenge, but don't quote me on that one. And that would, if anything, be a second-hand GT3 car. So this is going to be big. And the news is that McLaren are interested in IndyCar because not only are you able to extend that Honda partnership over there, but it's a great way for them to sell their cars, effectively. So this is going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out on that side of the Atlantic, particularly because this is now going to be... This is the biggest media storm in IndyCar, effectively, since Nigel Mansell joined the series in 1992 when every British tabloid press member was there. It was absolutely extraordinary, and I think this is also the biggest defection, well, not really defection, but the biggest move from F1 to America since, of course, Juan Pablo Montoya walked away from Formula One and a fairly successful team in McLaren to try his hand at NASCAR. So, yeah, this is huge, and it's a big coup for IndyCar. You sort of think that they will probably have been pushing for this a little bit as well. It sort of shocked all the IndyCar drivers. They all didn't know what was happening. I think probably the man who's probably the biggest shock would have to be Stefan Wilson, who's the man Alonso will be replacing at Andretti. But yeah, it's huge and it's exciting. And I think it shows that I think Fernando, the time is coming for Fernando Alonso to start to think that, I'm not going to win the third world championship. And his tone at the beginning of the year, and that this is the best race I've ever run for the first two races, I think says that he's not necessarily disappointed, but he's more resigned. Yeah, this is the best I'm going to do. Why don't I look at my other two options? Do IndyCar whilst I'm still in my 30s, and then maybe do Le Mans during my early 40s, because, of course, the ages for IndyCar and Le Mans are a little bit... you get a longer lifespan out of them than you do with F1. But, yeah, it's just incredibly exciting, and it's making me very tempted to stay up all night on Sunday,
May the 29th?
It'll be into the early mornings of May the 29th to watch this race. It's going to be absolutely extraordinary. And the most exciting thing is he could do really well. I mean, the Honda teams are very good this year. And on Super Speedways last year, they were superb. How much better can they do this year? And if Andretti give him a decent car, and they probably will because they're getting paid good money to do so, this is going to be incredibly exciting, Josh.
Yeah, for sure. And Andretti Autosport confirmed this morning that Michael Andretti, who is a household name, not as good as his father ever was of Marco, but Michael Andretti is going to be his race strategist and engineer. So, yeah, that's another big tick for Alonso's campaign. Like, it certainly will be a big learning curve for Alonso, you know, because he's never actually raced on an oval and super speedways, and Indianapolis is certainly a pretty tricky track. Normally it's either one or two lane groove, which is a big problem considering it's a 3x3x3 formation for a 33 car field. And that's another thing as well. I don't think Fernando Alonso has ever partaken in a rolling start. Regardless of, doing it 3x3 rather than 2x2. So that's another thing. So the start procedure and, even the command, drivers start the engines, that's going to be totally foreign to him. So it's going to be a steep learning curve, but Indy's one of those very unique events where there's a lot of testing time. And I'd imagine that Andretti will be most focused about making sure he has a good relationship with his teammates, which I think will be Max Chilton, Alexander Rossi, the
Ryan Hunter-Reay,
Takuma Sato, and I think there's one more. I think it's also Marco another. And, I think it's another
Marco
wild
and Gretti will be the other car.
Yeah. I think they might be running one more wild card as well at Andretti for the 500. So, it's just huge, and we're not even halfway through this yet. Like, this is also very big in terms of the future of Andretti Autosport and Target Chip Ganassi, because obviously, as well, like we detailed this at the start of the year, Chip Ganassi coming in from Chevrolet to Honda, basically taking away Andretti Autosport as the lead Honda team. Now, this really does make things interesting, because like Chip Ganassi, they've taken over and they've done okay, but not fantastic. And Andretti Autosport could have potentially really put them in back in their box if they didn't have all those reliability issues at Long Beach last weekend. So yeah, this could be really interesting. And if Chip Ganassi don't like the treatment they gave Honda and see that Andretti Autosport are getting all the favoritism and are basically going to be linked to McLaren, then it could potentially be very tempting for Chip Ganassi to go back to Chevrolet. So that's another thing to keep in mind. And also, the F1 silly season, it starts now, so because Alonso has been long tipped to take over from Bottas or Raikkonen if they go to a different team or place or whatever next year, or they're booted out altogether. So this effectively cancels him out of the Ferrari and Mercedes seats, because you certainly wouldn't expect Ferrari or Mercedes to let Alonso go for the Indy 500, because I hardly doubt that this would be his first and only attempt at the Indy 500. So it takes him out of that and promotes guys like Sergio Perez, Daniel Ricciardo, if he gets annoyed enough, Roman Grosjean. It promotes them up the list in terms of probability of getting those seats. So that's another thing to keep in mind. So Alonso very well could sign on with McLaren for 2 years. However, it probably will be more of a US-based contract rather than a British-based contract. So yeah, that's another thing to keep in mind. And I think that covers quite a bit of it. Like it's very difficult, with all these layers, in it. And I think, this was really helped by Liberty Media's takeover, because, it was originally started by Stefan Wilson, wanting to, who was coincidentally the brother of Justin Wilson, who tragically died at Pocono a couple of years ago. He wanted, his own team or car or whatever the plan was. So he wants to come into IndyCar, full-time, either as a driver or either as a part-time driver or as a team owner, most likely as a team owner. And, he's done a deal, through many different aspects, Zach Brown, obviously, he had a very big influence in making this deal work. One after another, with Ron Dennis, leaving McLaren at the end of last year, he came into the fray, he's looking for a title sponsor, and, the opportunity comes up for a very big PR campaign with IndyCar to run Alonso in the 500. So, this could very well bring about a title sponsor for McLaren much sooner than anticipated. So
yeah,
it's a very multi-layered deal, and it benefits a lot of people and raises a lot of questions about a lot of people's future. So apologies if we've missed anything about this, but it's just so layered. We haven't seen anything like this for a long, long time.
Yeah, this is extraordinary in terms of the breaking. Effectively, it's turned the entire world upside down. With that, of course, the question is, maybe the deal has been done. Stephen Wilson sits out of this year's 500 to get a full team next year with cooperation of McLaren, who will fund it. And also, another thing to keep in mind, IndyCar's TV rights deal expires at the end of this year. They'll probably be pushing for a much better deal, which sees them have much more coverage in terms of better coverage, because currently the ABC team who covers the big races look half asleep, and I think they probably are. And of course, NBC have been putting a lot of effort into the coverage, but it hasn't yet gone to the main channel. It's been stuck away on cable TV. So getting a better deal out of that will be a big focus, I guess, and probably getting the coverage better. And of course, that would, of course, probably roll over overseas, because of course, currently the Formula One coverage internationally, which is managed by ESPN International, is a bit hit and miss, depending on where you're watching. So if they can get some, all sorts of together, it could really lay the groundwork for an IndyCar expansion, not necessarily in terms of races overseas, that's still way off in the future, but in terms of popularity and becoming a feasible second tier F1 and possibly a really popular series in Europe where the time zone works pretty well most of the time. I mean, interesting as well, Zak Brown said that the original idea of Alonso competing at the 500 was a joke. And it was only really finalized over the Chinese Grand Prix. So things must have fallen together very quickly, but I expect Honda were very happy about this, and it just really legitimizes an IndyCar program, which has struggled over the last few years, but this year has really been hitting its stride. So that we'll talk about more Formula 1. We've got plenty to get to. We will get to IndyCar later in the program. We talk about the Long Beach Grand Prix. We start off, though, first with some interesting news coming out of Formula 1 concerning a silly season of a different kind. Josh mentioned we had the driver silly season effectively already started. We had a team silly season a couple of years ago when we weren't sure financially where people were and whether Red Bull will even get a set of engines. So this year is the circuit silly season. We've already got some big news. Malaysia is out of the Grand Prix, out of Formula 1. We've known that for some time. They've been hinting about it, but it's now confirmed. But in addition to France coming in next year, we now have the possibility that Turkey could return. And, well, amongst all of this, that Bernie Ecclestone could make a return to the sport as the new owner of Interlagos. It's all happening, Josh. I mean, it's all pretty extraordinary. I mean, starting off with Turkey, it's interesting because Chase Carey effectively criticized Azerbaijan and said, yeah, I'm not really a big fan of these sort of trophy races held in the Middle East. At which point he decides to have a wonderful sit down with President Erdogan of Turkey and says, yeah, we'll bring back the Turkish Grand Prix, even though there's little to no economic feasibility to it. So, yeah, shows maybe not too much has changed in Formula One. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, but yeah, it's all going off.
Yeah, for sure. And, I think this gives us the indication that Chase Carey and Liberty Media, they're going to be chasing the classic and great circuits. Like, you know, if they were able to, I'm pretty sure they'd try and have a race at Le Mans or at the Bugatti circuit. Everything's on the table right now. And even as Naveen said, the silly season recap isn't fully complete. Like, we've still got Singapore, who have talked not wanting F1 anymore and not wanting to renew their contract at the end of this year. You know, even that is still on the table, and it's actually flying under the radar. So, yeah, Singapore as well, you have to take into consideration. It would be a really big loss for Formula 1 to lose a race like Singapore, which effectively is a night Monaco Grand Prix in Asia, which is what it was intended to be. So it'd be a real shame to lose Singapore. Malaysia, it had some good races, and unfortunately, it's just not really up for Formula One anymore. You know, no matter what the organizers did, like the tickets were dirt cheap, and so were the airfares, and it's basically right next to the international airport, and even then, it just couldn't draw the crowds. Turkey, as I briefly mentioned, as I said, Liberty Media, they want to chase the great circuits of the world, and they're showing us that they're doing that. The current gen F1 cars going through Turn 8 would be fantastic. Just to watch. Obviously, as well, there's a lot of concerns as well. You know, attendance, safety concerns, just there's just concerns about, you know, cost benefit, and, you know, with all these races, you know, wanting to come in like Turkey, and, you know, there was you know, and, you know, with them wanting to do a race at Willow Spring, at you know, Palm Springs, where they were last looking for a second US race, you know, you just have to think, you know, they have to sit down and go, right, we've only got 25, well, we've only got 20 slots for Grand Prix around the world. We have to choose what we're doing very, very carefully, where we're going very, very carefully, because ultimately we want the best calendar possible year in, year out, producing the best races, the best atmosphere, and, you know, we want to be going to the tracks that have the best soul, but not tracks that are completely run down. So, yeah, it's difficult to get the 20 best races, you know, on your calendar. So, yeah, that's another thing. And also, as well, the London Grand Prix rumours have started up once again with legislation passing through British Parliament in the past 24 hours, allowing street race motorsport events to be performed on the streets of London. So that's another thing to keep an eye on. However, Silverstone does have a very long contract, and I personally think it would be best for F1 to stay at Silverstone, because Silverstone is basically where F1 was born in the modern era. Like, that's where the very first championship race was held, and, you know, it consistently draws crowds in the 200,000 mark, which is even big for a street circuit. You know, even some of the biggest street races in the world, Monaco, Long Beach, etc. So I personally think F1, you know, having a race in the middle of London would do more harm than good. At Silverstone, it's just the true home of F1 in the UK, and but this does leave the door open for Formula E to return to London rather than, you know, have it, you know, all the way out at Battersea. It certainly would be very attractive for them to have it right smack bang in the centre of London. But then again, you'll have to, you know, somehow put, you know, build your, squeeze your pit, all the pit complexes in somewhere in London. Like, it's hard enough to get a park in London, from what I've heard. You know, it's going to be even harder to put a pit complex in there. So, yeah, just there's a lot of question marks. And, you know, we could have, you know, 21 races, 22 races, or we could have, like, 19 or 18. We just don't know yet. Like, it's just so up in the air. Like, This could be one of the most radical calendar changes in an off-season that we've seen in F1. For some time.
Yeah, it's certainly said to be a lot of change. Yeah, and of course, yeah, the news that Brazilian Grand Prix, which is sort of being financially on the rocks, much like the country that hosts it, has the news that Bernie Ecclestone is looking at buying Interlagos, which would be, I think, his second big circuit purchase after Circuit Paul Ricard, which is set to hold the French Grand Prix. At the moment, that Liberty did confirm that deal is still in place, no matter what was happening with Bernie Ecclestone's involvement in Formula One management. But yeah, this decision to buy Interlagos, which is interesting for two reasons. First of all, Ecclestone had the greatest of histories with Brazil. His mother-in-law, who's actually younger than him, by the way, was kidnapped in Brazil a couple of years ago by his helicopter pilot, of all things. So that was interesting. And of course, he's been consistently pushing Brazil and been threatening to take away their Grand Prix if they don't complete their circuit upgrade, which I think they're still only half finished. They sort of did most of the circuit. I think they did bits of the pit lane, but I don't think it's all entirely done. So if he buys it, he's going to have to pay for it all himself later. But yeah, I think personally, I'd rather see Brazil. I can see this is probably Bernie Ecclestone saying, I don't really want to leave the sport entirely. And this is sort of the best opportunity for me to keep an involvement and keep an eye and keep an eye on what's happening inside the sport. And also, the fans would love it because Brazil still gets great attendances, even though it's a pain to get to and Sao Paulo is a somewhat dangerous city. It's still one of these marquee races of the year, and last year produced a spectacular race in the rain. And yeah, it would be a shame to see it go, which is why I'm kind of happy that Bernie might be chipping in and doing something a bit charitable with the millions he made off the back of Formula One's yeah, the millions he made off Formula One's back by purchasing the circuit. And I think it's probably a good thing. And hopefully it does all get through and we do see the Brazilian Grand Prix another year, another few years on the calendar.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, I mean, yeah, it's amazing. Like, it's almost impossible to keep track of all the circuit silly season going on because there's just so many opportunities and options and possibilities that could play out up until the FIA confirms it at the end of the year. So, yeah, it'll be a real shame. excuse me. It'll be a real shame to lose Interlagos. It's a fantastic circuit. And, I don't want them to make radical changes to the circuit like there was originally a proposal to move the pit lane basically to the first DRS straight, the non-DRS pit straight. You know, after the Senna S's, there was proposals to move the pit lane to there, which would have been, you know, pretty hard to get used to. But yeah, just Interlagos, well, with Bernie behind him and all his magic millions, you know, it certainly does. Certainly would have a much more secure future. So, yeah, like, I mean, it can only be a good thing. And, you know, the Bernie buying Interlagos can only be good for everyone. So, yeah, like, I mean, I think, you know, this is going to be, a very good deal, you know, with Bernie, you know, ahead, buying Interlagos, sorry. And, you know, with Bernie on your side, you know, a circuit is certainly not going to lose out on a contract with Liberty Media. So, it's going to be fantastic for the future of Brazil. And, it just wouldn't be F1 if we didn't have a Brazilian race. And not only that, you know, with the amount of F1 fans there, it'll be in South America, it'll be a real shame for the closest race for South American fans to be the Mexican Grand Prix in Mexico City. So Brazil needs to stay on the calendar, and signs are looking good at the moment, but it's a very long and very complex silly season in terms of the schedule is concerned for F1 heading into next year. So it's all to play for.
Okay, well, you've been listening to the Mailbox Chicane. We've almost gone half an hour. We still haven't talked about the race. The Chinese Grand Prix was on over the weekend, and it was much better than the Australian Grand Prix, for sure. If anything, it was a very typical Formula One race, a very typical good Formula One race, not an exceptional one, but good, as in you're satisfied watching it. There wasn't necessarily a race from the front, there rarely ever is. Lewis Hamilton pretty much cruised, leading every single lap on the way to victory. However, there was plenty of action in the top five, particularly amongst Sebastian Vettel, Max Verstappen, and Daniel Ricciardo. Of course, Vettel pulling off some superb moves to secure himself second place after he got a terrible start from sort of somewhat outside of his pit box. That was an interesting aspect of that race, although technically there's no win in the rules that says he can't do that. So, yeah, it's something Formula One need to patch up over the next few days. Max Verstappen was the star after engine problems forced him out of an early exit in qualifying. He managed to get himself onto the podium, holding off Daniel Ricciardo with some thrilling final laps. Another great classic style Formula One race where there wasn't necessarily much overtaking, but the overtaking you did see was certainly spectacular, Josh.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I mean, you know, when people try and push for as much overtaking as possible, I think they just need to be reminded about the overtaking that was displayed at Baku. Yes, there was lots of it, but it was very undramatic and there wasn't one tensor overtake, whereas, you know, there were much less overtakes at China last weekend. However, they were all fantastic overtakes into the hairpin at turn six. So, yeah, you know, a much better race. The Pirelli tyres, you know, really suiting the Chinese Grand Prix circuit at Shanghai. You know, the tyres were bang on what everyone wanted. However, you know, China isn't like it's just too much of an abrasive circuit for it to be called a normal, typical F1 circuit, especially when we go to places like Monza. So, yeah, like, there's still some hope that this season's on-track action is going to be good. And going ahead to Bahrain this weekend, you know, there is the possibility for some good overtakes. However, you know, Bahrain is a much more open and very, very wide circuit. Like, it's certainly not constricted, except for the two very tight left-hand kinks onto the support category pit straight, just behind the normal paddock. So, yeah, like, I mean, there could be some interesting moves in there. It would be great to see the cars, you know, fly through those two very tight left-handers at full pelt and break as late as possible. So that'll be fantastic to see. Yeah, just the race, you know, just in general, yeah, you know, very good race. But hopefully this isn't the race we look back on and go, that was the best race out of a pretty mediocre year. So, yeah, and also as well, Kimi Raikkonen, once again, you know, just not finding the right setup. Like, he was understeering all weekend, and I don't think he's still used to those to the new Pirelli tires. So, you know, that, like, it's certainly very early in the championship. Like, we've still got 18 rounds to go, but, you know, I'm starting to think that Raikkonen's days are numbered, and Bottas, you know, spinning under the safety car, you know, you just don't do that. You just can't do that at Mercedes. Like, not even Rosberg did that once. So, yeah, you know, pressure's on for Raikkonen and Bottas, as their futures are certainly under a very big cloud. As, yeah, if both of them continue their current form into the European season to the Monaco Grand Prix, then they're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, not a great weekend for the two Finns in the field. Valtteri Bottas, of course, spinning and under the safety car. And Kevin, Kimi Raikkonen is looking much slower than we thought. We thought that, oh, Archie was doing very well that before with Sebastian Vettel, but Vettel stepped up, and I think he loves these new cars, but Raikkonen not so much, and he's not fully convinced. So that was the top six, pretty much. Hamilton, Vettel, Verstappen, Ricciardo, Raikkonen, Bottas. Carlos Sainz, the highest place, Toro Rosso. Disappointing result for Danny Kvyat, who retired. Kevin Magnussen getting points for Haas, although he was a lap down, in eighth place. And the Force India's Sergio Perez and Esteban Ocon rounding out the top 10. Grosjean just missing out on a Haas points finish as well. The two Renaults, a sort of more disappointing result. Hülkenberg and Palmer, looks like their pace is not necessarily as good as it was in Australia. Very disappointing for the Williams. Felipe Massa in 14th, way out of it. The second place, not the second last finisher, effectively, followed by Marcus Ericsson. Fernando Alonso, we've talked about his form more than enough. He's not happy, and he, of course, didn't finish the race. As to Danny Kvyat, Stoffel, Van Dorn, Antonio Giovinazzi, this is an interesting one. After impressing everybody in Australia the weekend to forget for him, crashed out in qualifying, did a very similar thing in the race, sort of caught out a bit by the changing conditions in the second case, but not necessarily the best way to impress Ferrari, considering this was the track where he arguably needed to put in a fantastic performance to sort of seal the deal. Pascal Wehrlein will be back for the Bahrain Grand Prix, but there's still an opportunity. The door is open. We might see later in the year he gets some testing sessions with Ferrari and possibly some free practice sessions. But yeah, a very disappointing weekend for Giovinazzi.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I just feel bad for him because, you know, if he, you know, brought the car home and, you know, impressed once again, then, you know, that would seal the deal. That would seal his dream of becoming an F1 driver. So, you know, it's just a big shame, and he has to be kicking himself over it, you know, because he had everyone's attention. He, you know, did everything right in Australia, and he just had 2 days, which just, it didn't totally undo it. Like, I mean, you know, no one's going to forget his amazing debut at Australia, but yeah, it takes away from his great performance, and yeah, just it puts his you know whether or not he's actually going to be on the grid next year in slight doubt. You know, even though, you know, after Australia, it's like, oh yeah, this kid's got it. You know, he's in there with Gasly, and yeah, just he just had the weekend to forget, and also as well a very disappointing race for Lance Stroll, who was very impressive getting into Q3 so soon, actually. Like, I mean, I don't think after Australia many people predicted that he would get into Q3, and yet, you know, in the changing conditions at China, he did. And then, you know, in the most frustrating circumstances, he gets involved with Perez in the double left-hander, towards the end of the second sector, and he goes off in the gravel, and that's his race done. So a very disappointing and frustrating race for Lance Stroll, as you know, that would have been the race where, you know, he almost confirms himself for the next few years at Williams, and yeah, just really disappointing for him. But you know, what we do know now is that he's got the speed, and you know, as every session goes by, he gets more and more used to the F1 car. So, you know, who knows? By Abu Dhabi, he might, you know, start outperforming Massa. You know, we just don't know. But yeah, just a real disappointing race for Williams as a whole. And yeah, just it sets up what's going to be a very you know, crucial race for a lot of teams and drivers heading to Bahrain this weekend.
Yeah, it's interesting as well. There was no penalty given for that Sergio Perez-Lance Stroll incident, and I heard Nick Asala talking on the BBC after the race, and he said that they're going with a more lenient penalty policy. In fact, that unless it's something really stupid or malicious or something like that, it's going to be a racing incident. And of course, that's probably why if Sebastian Vettel wasn't penalized, because they sort of trying to get rid of the pointless penalty and sort of the chaos we got last few years with engine penalties and stuff. And they're taking a more common sense approach. And I think that's probably the approach to go. And I guess Liberty is probably part of that in sort of ensuring that it's easy for the fans to understand there's some common sense in the stewards' decisions. And that's something I think both Josh and I will be a fan of. So we head to Bahrain. For the third race of the season, 57 laps at the Bahrain International Circuit. This is going to be an interesting one in terms of racing as well. We've got the longest straights, three great long straights. That's the thing about this track, where we should see some plenty of overtaking, hopefully. Even with or without DRS, we're still going to see plenty of action. And I think as well, coming into probably the most exciting parts will be that sort of turn four, five area where, of course, we saw Hamilton and Rosberg dueling in 2014. I think we're going to see a lot of action there in terms of what's going on with people and performance and all of that. It should be very exciting, Josh. And I think this is a race where I think we are most likely to see some great moves, because it's happened in the past and in 2014, which was, of course, the first year of the last generation. And considering how close everybody is in terms of performance this year, I'm hoping that they'll be able to keep it going.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's certainly a possibility. But then again, like, as I said before, the Chinese Grand Prix, it could be the complete opposite. However, even if it's the complete opposite, as what Naveen said, it's still going to be a really interesting race, as this is the race I feel Ferrari needs to do well at to really confirm that they are in this championship hunt. Comparing the first two races, like, Australia is a bit of a mishmosh race in terms of, like, you know, a bad car can do pretty well in Australia. China's always been a Mercedes circuit. They've always done well there, and they always have an advantage. Bahrain's a completely neutral circuit to both Ferrari and Mercedes. This is where, you know, the running order for the next five races will be decided at Bahrain. So, yeah, it's all to play for this weekend. Vettel needs to do well. And because there is Rosewater on offer for the champions this weekend, I think Kimi Raikkonen is in with a really good shout to continue his Rosewater celebrations and to miss out on the champagne. So, yeah, that's another thing as well. I think, you know, this will be the weekend that confirms that Red Bull will be in the middle of nowhere, fighting out for fifth and sixth place. Also, big weekends ahead for Lance Stroll, Valtteri Bottas, Williams in general, and also Haas, who do need to impress, who do need to, you know, just have a solid points finish to confirm that they are right in the middle of the midfield. And, you know, we could potentially see the possibility that after one and a bit seasons of F1 racing, Haas are on the same level as Force India, who had their best ever year in F1 over 10 years last year. That would be amazing for the American outfit to achieve that feat. Now, like, certainly no one would have ever expected it before they came in last year.
Yeah, and because even with that, Force India had 10 years plus their experience with Jordan, for a completely new team to come in and do that with a little bit of help would be absolutely extraordinary. Let's move back now to Australia and across to the Bass Strait to Tasmania, where there was plenty of action at Launceston Super, or no, Simmons Plains Super Sprint in Launceston. We will have to start. There's nowhere else we can start other than race three, where we saw a phenomenon from NASCAR strike the Supercars Championship. The big one happened on a road circuit. And it was, Simmons Plains was pretty much the only place where it could happen in the rain, in difficult conditions. Visibility was poor. We had this massive shunt takeout, 11 cars, 4 out for the weekend. Poor Will Davison in hospital, though he is out now and feeling much better. But yeah, an extraordinary shunt, Josh, and really something we haven't seen in supercars in the modern era, effectively.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a long, long time since we've seen a crash this big, as certainly the older fans would certainly have flashbacks back to when the race was completely stopped at Bathurst, because, you know, there was just one complete roadblock at the top of the mountain. So, yeah, just a lot of talk about race three, and it's not going to go anyway anytime soon. I think race three, just shows that Dunlop, now that they've done a good job with the super soft tyres, that they need to really invest in making the wet tyres even better, and just shift more and more water for torrential rain conditions. Right now, I wouldn't mind if the current wet weather tyres, current generation of wet weather tyres that they have on offer for all teams, you know, that becomes the intermediate tyre, or, you know, put some more or take away some tread and make that the intermediate tyre. I think there are a lot of advantages for all series to have an intermediate and a wet tyre, even though it does cost a little bit. It certainly will pay dividends, as I really think that they need more investment in that wet weather tyre. Like, you know, the commentators and teams and drivers have been complaining a long time that, you know, the wet weather tyres aren't really wet tyres. They're sort of like intermediate tyres. I think now is the moment where that full wet tyres are introduced into supercars. Also, as well, there is some good news that the full leg protection, which was the final frontier in terms of driver safety, will be mandatory across all 26 cars by Sandown. So you'll see that come into supercars over the next few months with full leg protection, and that really completes the full safety cell for all the drivers, which means injuries will be put at an absolute minimum, which is fantastic to see. And I think now we have reached the elephant in the corner, the race declaration and the points that were given and taken away.
This is an interesting one. First off, there's a question from a couple of fans. Should they have gone racing in the first place? I think they should have. I don't want to see what happens with Formula 1 where they spend half the race behind a safety car and then this thing happens. I'd much rather they got it over and done with. It was a... Let's make this clear. This is a freak accident. This is not something that's going to happen every time you're going road racing, because the conditions were so unique in terms of it being a twilight race. There wasn't much rain. All the water was coming off the circuit. So because of that, it was really bright. It was nothing we've seen before in supercars. Should they have gone racing in the first place? I think they should have. Should they resume the racing is the question. And I think this is the real thing that annoys me about supercars. This is a series which is generally pretty well run. Most of the decisions they make are pretty common sense in terms of everything. In terms of the sport and the product is fantastic. There are some things that still concern me. It's not perfect. The future still looks a little bit unstable at the moment. But it shows that yet again, once they're thrown, once all hell breaks loose, everybody in the supercars paddock has no idea what is going on. Because we had this bizarre decision to run effectively 2.5 laps at the end of the race. They took the surviving cars out for a little 2 joyride laps behind the safety car, called it a race, gave 4 points originally before taking it back. Trey Magnusbergen was the car who took the pole position and took the race. No, he didn't take the pole position. Mostert was leading, but Van Gisbergen was the lucky person who was out there in front. But yeah, this was it just shows that they need to rush up on the rule book, really. I mean, this is the same thing that happened with drop gates and all of that. And it's clear in hindsight that you shouldn't have restarted. I mean, it was still chaos in the pit lane. Had they had to come through the pit lane for something, it would have been people running around all over the place. There were still cars being removed and all of that. It was just a mess. And I think the common sense decision would have been to call it off. And I'm very happy that they did take back that points declaration and decide, no, it's going to be non-championship, which is the logical thing.
Yeah, I personally believe that they really should, reinforce, because I don't think it's gone away, but reinforce the 75% race distance rule, which would have been, about lap 37, 38, for that to be declared of a 50-lap race. I really think they should have, enforced that and gone, like, we're not going to, and they should have just said, look, we're not going to make it to 75% race distance before the time certain finish and before we run out of lights, so we'll just declare the race. They should have just declared it on the spot when it was clear that they just wouldn't be able to get all the cars off and get the circuit clean and ready for racing once again. Excuse me. The 75% rule, it's been absolutely fantastic in the past. I just don't understand why it wasn't used. And
The 50% rule, that you don't award points unless it's not a race, unless it's finished 50%. That should have been adhered to in the first place. So, yeah, it's just really bizarre.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, I mean, I really don't understand. And, like, I'm really not a fan of CAMS at the moment, obviously, with the response they had to the non-CAMS event of Grant Denyer's crash. I don't like that. Also as well, and for that, and was CAMS originally, CAMS solely originally that awarded the points and declared it a race, the CAMS officials and supercars, James Warburn, Brad Jones, and Roland Dane, and they said that it shouldn't be a race. All the team owners agreed. And all the points were taken away, even though Roland Dane, who would have been the lead voices in that, because whether you like him or not, in times of chaos, Roland Dane, really does go back to common sense. Point an example is the start line chaos at the Gold Coast 600 in 2011 when he proposed a rolling start. But throwback is for another time. So. Yeah, should have declared it there and then. 75% rule, get wet with the tyres, it was sort of inevitable that someone was gonna come out, in bad shape, because the field was very congested. Maybe they need to consider for tight circuits like Simmons Plains, to have a single file rolling start. Or rolling restart, I should say, just so the cars aren't all bunched up. Turn three, it's a very, very tight corner, and if you go side by side, you're just asking for trouble in any form of condition. So, yeah, just 75% rule reinforced, wet weather tyres introduced, proper wet weather tyres introduced. And just clarification that the current gen wet weather tyres are intermediate tyres. Also, as well, declare the race when you just have no hope of making that 75% distance. And also, possibility of single file restarts in extreme conditions.
Yeah, those are a lot of common sense things that I think, should have been adhered to in the first place. They're going to discuss some rule tweaks after the race, presumably just to clarify what happens with weather conditions. Of course, they were hamstrung by the fact, well, two things. First, of course, the TV window, which is very strict because they have to sell this thing internationally, and international broadcasters don't like things getting dragged out. And also the fact that we had, because it was a twilight, not really a twilight race, but it was just before sunset, they needed to be very careful in terms of how late they ran it, and it was pretty much almost dark by the time things finished up. And because of that, we're going to have some, there's some interesting situations going on with the teams, because four cars taken out, Will Davison's car, which was already on the Spirit of Tasmania by the time, in bits and pieces, by the time, the second race of the weekend came around. James Courtney's car, which is a complete write-off, they had to go and resurrect Garth Tander's chassis from the 2015, which of course he won the Post Enduro Cup in. Also, Jason Bright's chassis is going to be, brought back as well. The one that crashed at Clipsal, they're going to have to bring that back together and get that ready by Phillip Island. Plenty of stuff going on behind the scenes to sort of get everybody back and ready and ready to go. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. Race 2, though, ran with less of an incident. We had a thrilling qualifying session showing that how the way that the conditions really helped the supercars, which is really a strong thing, but with the fact that we had about 5-10 cars going for pole position. Dale Wood, who qualified 18th, was running up for pole, and he would have been in the top 5 had he not gone off at the final corner. But then the race was exceptional. Of course, the big thing, and this will make Josh very happy indeed, DJRT Penske got their first championship win proper. They got some champagne at the Australian Grand Prix, but it's finally happened. It was Fabian Coulthard who led home a 1-2. It was a great race, very competitive, all sorts of battles happening. But Penske played the strategy game right, played the conditions right to make sure that they were on top. Coulthard driving from 6th, running the strategy well with the safety car. And yeah, a very good result. And it now really shows, and I think this is what's really exciting as fans as well, that we are going to have a proper battle between teams and between drivers for this championship, and that is really exciting, Josh.
It is. Like, Penske, they're no longer pretenders or talking, oh, yeah, in, like, X amount of years we'll be, you know, championship contenders. They're here right now, championship contenders. This is what we've been waiting for since the deal was first announced. And, yeah, like, it's on right now. Like, I mean, there's a lot of races to go. I think there's about 22 races left in the championship, so a lot of times to get points, and thankfully we don't have to wait too long for the next couple of races with Phillip Island being next weekend and Barbagallo being 2 weeks after. So yeah, we are in for an absolute cracker year, as you know, who knows who's going to win it. Like, there's you know, Van Gisbergen, who currently leads the championship by 20 points over Fabian Coulthard. Both those guys are contenders. Then you've got Scott McLaughlin. You can never discount him. And also Jamie Wincup, who is very hungry to just get back that championship that's been eluding him for the past few years. So a lot to play for. And yeah, like, who knows what's gonna happen by the time we get to Newcastle. But If you came up to me and said that Fabian Coulthard would win the 2017 championship, I would have just plain out laughed at you. And now, two events in, like, yeah, we are still only two events in, but two events in, it doesn't look so crazy anymore. And I certainly wouldn't have picked Fabian Coulthard as having the ability to win a championship. But yet, here we are, as he's reigned second in the standings right now. So yeah, like, it's going to be amazing to see how this plays out, and yeah, just bring on the rest of the year. It's going to be an absolute fantastic season.
Yeah, certainly plenty to look forward to. Let's move on now to the United States. We talked about IndyCar earlier in the show. The big marquee race, the second biggest marquee race of the year, took place, the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach, and it was James Hinchcliffe who took the victory. A very worthy victor indeed. It was another great Long Beach Grand Prix. Plenty of action at the front. A good battle between Hinchcliffe. Who else was in the running? Sebastian Bourdais, Ryan Hunter-Reay, who was disappointed. It was a disappointing result from them, the way they ended up going out of the race. But yeah, another race from an IndyCar series which just keeps on performing and keeps on giving us the goods. And yeah, just another great place to see great James Hinchcliffe take this win after all the troubles he's had in IndyCar. And this really puts him up in a good set to be a consistent challenger for the title and maybe even for the 500 in the end.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm pretty sure that this was the first win since his near fatal crash a few years ago. So a fantastic win for him. A very popular guy in the IndyCar paddock. It's fantastic to see Hinchcliffe back at the top, fighting for the race wins. And even more amazingly, Dale Coyne Racing of Sebastian Bourdais is still the championship leader. First at St. Petersburg, second at Long Beach. This shouldn't be happening. Like, Dale Coyne shouldn't be up there, and yet they are. Like, Honda shouldn't be doing this well, and yet here we are. Like, it's amazing, this season of IndyCar just, throws another surprise from nowhere almost every single week. Like, Dale Coyne Racing, Alonso, the revival of Bourdais, a return to Champ Car. Like, where's this all coming from? This is just...
And considering, they were on dire straits a couple of... Well, they were on life support 10 years ago, effectively. This is almost 10 years since the famous reunion, effectively. And within even the last couple of years ago, they were having issues with their aero kits, and it was sort of a bit, what's going on? But yeah, this is extraordinary. Of course, James Hinchcliffe taking the win, Bourdais second, goes to Newgarden, the highest place, Penske in and Chevrolet in third. What's quite interesting is, it was a terrible weekend for Andretti Autosport. All four cars out of the race. Takuma Sato, Alexander Rossi, Marco Andretti, Ryan Hunter-Reay, and most of those were due to mechanical failures, which just took them out. It was an unbelievable weekend. Doesn't really put too well for Indy 500 chances, but hopefully they sort it out, and I think with Honda support they will. But yeah, that was really weird to see the way that they just sort of tailed off at the end. But other than that, a very good race for Honda, and just shows that they are really, they've caught Chevrolet napping, I think. They put in the hard yards, they were behind the last 2 years, and now, I have to say, I think it's more likely that we'll see a Honda driver at the top of the championship table at the end of the year than a Chevrolet, and that's the first time I've been able to say that in a long, long time.
Yeah, for sure, and like, heading into this year, we all expected this year of IndyCar to be the year that Joseph Newgarden confirms himself as the next American to take back the IndyCar title, and for him to come of age. That's certainly not the story this year. This is his first podium, third place. Yes, he did do better than everyone else in Penske. Will Power, most notably, he had troubles all day with coming into contact with Charlie Kimball on the first lap. That sent Charlie Kimball out of the running, and Will Power just trundled around for the rest of the race. And, all in all, just, it sets up a fantastic season. There's 15 rounds to go, and probably anything will happen. It's amazing. But, just the prospect of Sebastian Bourdais winning for Dale Coyne the championship, it goes back to the days of Champ Car, the way he dominated with Newman Haas Racing back in the day in that red and yellow McDonald's number one Champ Car. It's amazing. And also as well, Simon Pagenaud, the real star of the race, coming from 21st place up to 5th, showing that, he really did deserve that championship last year. Fantastic race on his part. And also Bourdais' teammate, Ed Jones, the only rookie full-time in IndyCar this year, finishing in 6th place. So Ed Jones, also impressing quite a lot for Dale Coyne, and confirming that he will be in IndyCar for quite some time. So a fantastic weekend, and it just makes the rest of the championship very unpredictable. Next, IndyCar goes to Barber Motorsports Park, I believe it is, for the Grand Prix of Alabama, the first proper road course of the year. So no one really knows how everyone's going to do there. And then the week after that is And then the race after that is the race at Phoenix. No one knows how everyone's going to do there. And then the Alonso hype builds for yes. Indy. So it's going to be a very exciting few months for IndyCar.
Yeah, we have a mount-watering IndyCar 500. We've got Alonso, Juan Pablo Montoya versus Alonso. That battle is going to come back for the first time in probably over 10 years. That's going to be extraordinary. We're going to have Takuma Sato in there as well. It's like the best of 2004 is back again. It's going to be extraordinary. Talk about a real F1 going back to those era. IndyCar is going to do it same as well. But yeah, another mouth-watering IndyCar weekend. Speaking of, let's head now to the Argentina, where MotoGP was back in action on two wheels. Another win for Maverick Viñales, who's really come in very well, replacing Jorge Lorenzo at Yamaha. Valentino Rossi getting second place, another strong result for him. And a very disappointing result for Marc Marquez, who crashed from the lead and Jorge Lorenzo. So this is really another interesting race, another unpredictable race. So yeah, it's just MotoGP building on the hype, just showing that anything can happen. Nobody is safe, effectively, and it's all gonna go off.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Maverick Viñales said last weekend that he never expected this transfer to be so good. And he's saying he's not feeling pressure, but once he gets to Europe and to his home crowd at Jerez for the first European race of the season, that's when it's really going to hit him that he's in the big league now. There's no place to hide for him, and everyone's got very high expectations of him right now. And it just sets up a very interesting championship campaign. Everyone knew that Viñales would be one to watch this year, but no one expected him to be this good. This is a 21 to 22-year-old Spaniard who's only had a few seasons of bike racing.
He only had one win in the Premier Class before.
Yeah, only one win before, and all of a sudden, as soon as he moves to the factory team, he's a championship contender and basically on top of the world and leading the Spanish charge. So, his world has turned upside down. Pretty solid. Another points finish for Jack Miller as well in ninth place. Once again, doing considerably better than his teammate who finished about almost close to 20 seconds behind him. And Cal Crutchlow, another fantastic performance for him and the small Monaco team. So there's just fantastic news and prospects going up and down the paddock. But you have to say that Marc Marquez and Jorge Lorenzo, they're certainly feeling the pressure right now, as they need a very strong result at the Circuit of the Americas to make sure that they're still in the championship hunt. As if they continue to be in bad form, then they're quickly just going to be riders contending for Grand Prix wins as the year goes on.
Yeah, another exciting season. Johann Zarco, of course, the rookie who impressed by leading the Qatar Grand Prix after just a couple of laps. He finished fifth, a great points finish for him, and a finish in general. Disappointing weekend for the factory Ducati team, Dovizioso a disappointing result for both factory teams, Honda and for both Honda and Ducati, Dovizioso, Pedrosa, Marquez, and Lorenzo all out of the race. They all were taken out or fell off the track. So yeah, another unpredictable season. The paradigm has changed. The Circuit of the Americas will be a very interesting one indeed, because it's very unique dynamics compared to the two tracks that came before it, in terms of the elevation change you get and the corners and all of that is going to be and produce another weekend of thrilling racing. Now, we've got two things to get through. NASCAR, plenty of action. Jimmy Johnson finally getting his season into gear with the win at Texas was
sixth, Texas,
which is, of course, the resurfaced Texas track, and IndyCar is currently testing there at the moment. They've come in fairly quickly, but yeah, another win for him over Larson and Logano, who was still up there. Yeah, just another winner for NASCAR. Not entirely surprising. Also interesting in that he scored it right at the end. He only got the full win after winning the final stage. He was 22nd in that last stage and managed to take the lead. With 18 laps to go. So yeah, another thrilling end to a NASCAR race.
Yeah, for sure. And for most of the race, Ryan Blaney, with his small team, was leading for most of the race. I think he led about 153 laps at Texas, which is huge for him and his small team around him. And it's heartbreaking that he just didn't finish the race. And Kyle Larson, once again, second place after his win. Like, you can't discount Kyle Larson anymore. He's a championship contender, for sure. And he's just consistent week in, week out. And, yeah, just another second place, you know, just gained more points. And, yeah, just, you know, more impressive showing from him as he still leads the championship now by 17 points. So he's gained a very handy lead over Chase Elliott. And then it's he's got a 40-point lead to third place, Martin Truex Jr. So, yeah, that's a fantastic result for him. Also, you know, top marks to Texas Motor Speedway for, you know, the fantastic repave and basically changing turns 1 and 2, basically making it a bit like Gateway, but not quite. You know, with the different styles of banking. It was a real winner over the weekend, and certainly it's going to start the trend for how circuits are going to be repaid. So fantastic work on their part. The All-Star Race format was confirmed as well in the last 24 hours, as basically everything else was. As basically, it's going to be a flashback 25 years quick fire All-Star Race that happened 25 years ago. So they're going back to that, which is basically 3 20-lap stages and then a final 10-lap shootout for the top 10 cars over the night.
And the interesting thing as well with that is that NASCAR are now going to offer a second softer compound tire, which is the first time we've seen split tires in NASCAR for quite some time. Goodyear going to produce a softer compound.
Yeah. So that means it's going to be a completely different ball game, as you know, tires are just so crucial to getting the best performance possible over a race weekend. So yeah, that's going to throw a completely different dynamic into the works, as you know, we could see a brand new surprise winner at the All-Star Race. So that's another thing to keep in mind. Just in the background, there have been some judicial reviews handed out with the 17, you know, of Matt Kenseth, I believe it is, you know, their appeal being successful in terms of their wheel nut infringement. So there'll be no penalty for them, and the penalty for number 2 of Brad Keselowski at Penske will be maintained with full fines. And his crew chief suspension still in force, as all this sets up a good weekend ahead. I'm not sure where NASCAR is this weekend. I'm not sure.
We'll just do a quick check. I don't know the technical difficulties you see up at the moment. Let's have a look at the schedule. Of course, we're about six rounds in. They head
Bristol.
Off to Bristol, another sort of very tight circuit, one of the tightest circuits on the calendar.
But one that will definitely benefit from the controversial stage rule.
Yeah, it will. It will sort of stop things blowing out of proportion there. Now, before we go, let's talk World Endurance Championship, because that kicks off this weekend at Silverstone. In fact, it kicks off, I think, later tonight with the first set of running with the support races. I love watching WEC, not necessarily sort of immersing myself in it. It's sports car racing is a very difficult thing to follow closely, but it's like watching Test cricket. You sort of just dive in for a little bit, see what's going on. There'll generally be some good racing and something to enjoy yourself with. So yeah, it's a pleasure to watch. Effectively, the sixth season of the WEC kicks off at Silverstone. Then they head off to Spa in May. Le Mans over the 17th and 18th of June. That'll be across my birthday weekend. That'll be quite fun. The 6 hours of Nürburgring after that before we head over the international leg. Mexico, Circuit of the Americas, Fuji, Shanghai, and Bahrain. Nine races on the calendar. Looking at the actual categories, LMP1 is, of course, a big talking point because we're still not sure as to security of this particular category because we've only got three manufacturers and six cars in there at the moment, five cars full time at the moment, which isn't the greatest place for the championship to be. Although we do have Ginetta, I think, looking at joining next year, and possibly even they've been trying to tempt Peugeot back for ages. So you never know what will happen, but. Yeah, it's an interesting category, but still, it should hopefully produce some great racing. Hopefully, Toyota and Porsche fairly evenly matched.
Yeah, but all the information we've got from the prologue and to the build-up is not looking good for the inter-team battle between Porsche and Toyota, as Toyota have made enormous gains with their 2.4-litre turbo V6 hybrid engine, as they were considerably faster than Porsche over the prologue. I think they were about a second quicker. And Porsche have said that they'll bring their low drag setup to Silverstone, which almost guarantees that it will be a Toyota on the top step of the podium. However, Toyota, you know, they've just got a dark cloud hanging over them. Whenever they have a really good car, you know, something goes wrong, or they lose out on points because of something that's not in their control, or something else. So, yeah, like, this could be the year that Toyota finally gets Le Mans and the championship all in one year. So we could see some good battles going on between cars 7 and 8 all year, as it'll be really interesting to see how former World Touring Car Championship champion Jos Marina Lopez does in the WEC in car 7. He'll be joined by Kami Kobayashi and Mike Conway. And in car 8, we've got Sebastian Buemi, Anthony Davidson, and Kazumi Nakajima. So that'll be two cars, and then they'll have a third for Le Mans. So, yeah, everything's looking really good for Toyota, but LMP1, you know, it's not like it's not healthy at the moment, and having a one-way fight certainly won't do them any favors.
Yeah, the thing that will arguably play in Porsche's favor is the fact that this is a tournament, this is a series with where reliability is so important. I mean, one would argue that Audi probably had the quickest car last year, but they finished third because the reliability wasn't there, and then they kept getting outperformed at the crucial moments by Porsche and Toyota. I mean, Porsche, they've got an interesting lineup, of course. Mark Webber leaving the number two car, because the number one, the other Porsche, took the championship last year. He's been replaced by Earl Bamber, along with Brendan Hartley and Timo Bernhard. Meanwhile, there's been a bit of shuffling in the number one squad to incorporate Nick Tandy, as well as Andre Lotterer, who is the big signing coming over from Audi alongside Neil Yani. LMP2, though. Plenty more action down there. We've got plenty of cars. How many? I'm just counting. I think we've got 10 on the grid, which is a fairly solid lineup. Should be plenty of action from there. We have Rebellion, who, of course, dropped down from LMP1 to LMP2. We have Mana, G-Drive, TDS Racing, Senior Tech, Alpine, and the Jackie Chan DC Racing. Yes, Jackie Chan there with Hoping Tung. Plenty of action, a very good driving talent. A lot of the talent that was at the top of LMP1 has sort of trickled down. We've got Nelson Piquet Jr., Nico Prost, Bruno Senna, right running for Rebellion. John Eric Vern is with Mana as well. Vitaly Petrov, of course, around a couple of seasons in Formula 1. Alex Lynn and John Martin, an Australian contender. That should be very exciting as well to see another great Australian running up there, 32 from Gosford. We also have, just looking down, of course, Alex Brundle, the son of Martin Brundle, and Ollie Jarvis, who are with Jackie Chan Racing. So plenty of health in the LMP2, and the quality of all the drivers does seem to suggest that we will have a very close and exciting season in the secondary category.
Absolutely, and, you know, from the prologue, it's almost impossible to tell what the LMP2 pecking order is. So, yeah, LMP2, there's going to be a lot of on-track battles, and it's going to be really close. Like, you know, I certainly see the LMP2 category championship, I should say, sorry, being decided at Bahrain. Like, it is going to be that close. So, yeah, LMP2, you know, as always, it's a fantastic category, and I rightly think it should be the top category, as I think LMP1 is just past its use-by date. It's too complex, too expensive, and the competition just isn't there. So LMP2, another fantastic year lined up for it.
Exactly. Moving on now to the GT cars. We start off with GTE Pro. This is where the excitement is for a lot of people. We have got 8 cars in this year, 8 very competitive cars. AF Corsa with the 488 GTE. A very strong lineup. Lucas Degrassi moves in to that number 51 outfit. Sam Bird is still the number 71 squad as well. Should be exciting indeed. Ford Chip Ganassi Racing, that Ford GT, had some teething problems at the beginning, and I think a lot of those were because of balance performance, but they did win at Le Mans, and they are looking very strong as well. Stefan Mucha and Oli Plaat and Billy Johnson in the number 66. Andy Prio, Harry Ticknell, and Pippo Durrani in the 67. Porsche, also another strong contender as well. Not many strong people there, although Michael Christensen, possibly related to Tom Christensen, I don't know, in there as well. I think they lose the big guy, the big driver of Earl Bamber, who moves up to the main Porsche outfit. And Aston Martin Racing, another strong lineup with Richie Stanaway from New Zealand in there as well. 3 of those on Michelin, 1 of those the Aston Martin on Dunlops. So pretty much another strong 8-car team. Last year, I think GT Pro was a bit messy, mainly because we had lots of shenanigans involving balance of performance, because this Ford GT was just something else. And I don't think necessarily the competition was sort of prepared and sort of where to place it, which is where we got these controversies surrounding Le Mans, which is probably not the best thing to come out of it. But now, hopefully, it's all sorted. It's being coordinated across here and IMSA, so that way we have a really competitive season between Ford and Ferrari, which will be reigniting one of those great rivalries of endurance racing.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, it would be fantastic to see the Ford versus Ferrari battle on endurance circuits reemerge. Also, as well, you can't forget about Aston Martin, who were fantastic towards the back end of last year, you know, putting in some really fantastic performances and getting class wins. So Aston Martin, they're another one to keep your eye on. And Porsche, you know, they'll be there in the background, unfortunately. So it could be Ferrari versus Ford versus Aston Martin. What a juicy battle that is between the Italians, the Americans, and the British. So that's something to keep your eye on, as, once again, the quality of the field of GTE Pro is just, once again, in fantastic nick. And, yeah, like, all season long, they'll be going at it, slogging it race after race after race. And it'll be interesting to see who's made the most gains in the off-season.
Yes. So, this weekend, only two seasons running. The big ones, of course, all except for NASCAR as well. F1 in Bahrain and WEC at Silverstone. Now, you'll be pressing it up at 1 in the morning for the Bahrain race. I'll probably be recording it and watching it when I get up. And also, of course, Silverstone from 9 p.m. in the evening till 3 in the morning. It'll be just great to sort of watch the start of the race and watch it all unfold on Sunday night. Of course, there's coverage on the WC website, as well as the fantastic Radio Le Mans team. We've got John Hindoff back in the commentary box for the radio coverage this year, which is always great to see. So, plenty of action over the weekend, the Easter weekend. We wish you a very good Easter. Hopefully, you have lots of chocolate to enjoy. We'll be back next week to bring you all the action from the weekend. I've been Naveen Razik.
And I've been Josh Carroll.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye.